Welcome to River Life Podcasts. We're a church family embracing the Father's presence, releasing empowered people to declare and demonstrate Christ's kingdom. We trust that God would use what you hear today to bless and grow you so that you would be a blessing to those around you. For more information about River Life Baptist Church, go to riverlifechurch.org.au or find us on social media.
Well, welcome to church this morning. We're in week 4 of our covenant series. I trust that you've been really digging in during the week, that you've been following along with the daily devotions. There's some really good ones this week. Again, if you're here early at the start of the service, we kind of took Wednesday's devotion and a bit of Thursday's in devotion, thought, let's actually just have a go at doing it, hey? And just made this space a reflection time for the first 5 minutes of the service this morning. And so hopefully you're blessed by that. You kind of had the opportunity to rush out of the house a little earlier so that by the time you rushed in here and offloaded all the noise in your life, you could come and sit and be with the Lord for a moment. So hopefully you've been blessed by that. You know, this is a really interesting time and a really interesting season to be in, because you know, the reason we're doing this is that we believe that God has put a call on us as a community and as a family. We believe that God has called us, He has blessed us, He has developed us, has worked in us as a community for so many years now, not just so that we can go, oh, it's just nice to be here and the music's great and isn't it lovely? It's actually a little bit more than that. He's called us to love our community and see it transformed so that the kingdom of God breaks into the kingdom of this world. That's why we're here. And so when we do that, it only works most effectively when we actually do our part as the body, right? It only works best when we take up the invitation of God to respond to His goodness and His love and His mercy and His empowering presence, and we go and do the things that He asked us to do. Last week we talked about being present, about being here in the community of people, about showing up, and about when you come, actually intentionally being here. We're kind of talking about, what is it you do with your time? What is it you do with your relationships? Do you let God in and be Lord of your relationships? Today we're talking about surrendering our life to Him. I think it was Mark Twain who said it, but he said, sacred cows make the best hamburgers. So we're talking about time and your free will and your resources and money. So the barbecue's warming up. If you're getting uncomfortable, it's because the sacred cows are starting to sizzle. Anyone feeling uncomfortable yet? Okay, we'll need to dig deeper then. Okay. I'm just kidding. I love you guys. But we're working our way towards what it looks like really to be all in. Because if what God said He wants to do in this world from the moment He stepped into the world, from the moment in Genesis 3 when He started the process of saying, I'm going to set everything right and I'm going to use humans as my partners to bring this about, from the moment Jesus stepped onto the scene and said, there's a new way of knowing God and there's a new way of dwelling with Him, from that point forward, God's been calling us. He's been working. He's been inviting us into Him. But it works best, most powerfully, and for us, the most fulfilling way when we're all in. We've been working up to it. It's kind of like the hokey pokey, right? Left arm in, left arm out. But eventually you get to the end of the song and it's your whole self in. That's what we're working up to. So, spoilers, I'm sorry. But yeah, we're getting there. But today we're talking about what it looks like to live a surrendered life. And as I got this topic, I'm like, okay, God, I don't know where to begin. What do I do there? So I thought I'd just go back to the start. And the whole idea of a surrendered heart, if we go back to the very beginning, we start with the idea that people thought it was better to choose not God. God said, here I am, there's intimacy, there's availability, I'm with you, you can be with me. You know, we see that picture in the early parts of Genesis where the man and the woman just were with God, walking and communicating, but we chose not God, and it's kind of all gone south since then, right? It hasn't gone well for us, but it should be no surprise. I mean, the prophet Jeremiah picked up on this when he was talking about what God would step into the world and do one day as he starts to journey towards this beautiful peak in Jeremiah 31. In chapter 17, he says, "The heart is deceitful above all things. It is desperately sick. Who can understand it? I, the Lord," he says, "search the heart and test the mind, and to every man according to his ways, according to the fruit of his deeds." It's no surprise that when we start to talk about surrendering things, we start to get uncomfortable. We start to find ourselves a little worried, because without God, without Him in our lives, our heart is hopeless and hopelessly sick. It's hopelessly broken. And while we can look around the world and see all the amazing things are happening, we can also see all the broken things that are going on. And people will argue that this is the best time ever to be alive. And I would agree, regardless of how you felt yesterday went, I think it's actually still a pretty good time to be alive. But until everyone addresses the heart, until everyone addresses what's going on inside, even the most generous and altruistic person who looks to the needs of others before their own, without Christ, without God in the center, the heart will eventually work for its own purposes, to meet its own needs at the cost of whatever it takes. And this is the problem that the scriptures present to us. But the radical news of the new covenant, the covenant that we're invited into to participate in, is that God said, "You know what? I'm going to solve that. I'm going to fix that. A new covenant will bring to us a new heart, where the old one is deceitful and wicked and broken and seeking its own needs. God says, I'm going to come and I'm going to make a time and a place where a new heart will be given to you." The prophets of old foresaw this happening. They would see these defiant, unyielding, hard hearts within the people around them that would reject their Creator, that would reject relationship, that would reject the very best that God has for people, but declared from the very heart of God that there would come a time when a new heart would come, when a new relationship with God would arrive. Jeremiah says it in chapter 31, "For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, declares the Lord. I will put my law within them. I will write it on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people." There's intimacy. He promises that it's coming. Ezekiel says it in chapter 36, which I think is even more exciting. "I will give you a new heart. I'll put a new spirit within you. I'll remove the heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes and be careful to obey my rules." God always had a plan to fix us up. He knew our hearts would be broken, but He wanted to put a new heart within us. We hear it in the Shema that John had talked about, this prayer of ancient Israel. It says, "Hear, O Israel, love the Lord your God." He says, there's a time coming when you'll actually be able to love someone else and not love yourself. This is what Jesus picked up on in His commandments. Love the Lord and love your neighbor as you love yourself. Love is the foundation of our new heart. Love is the foundation of this covenant. Love is the way that we are drawn into God. But how does this new heart work then? Because I bet there's a whole bunch of us in the room who've got this new heart, right? So what do we do with it? How does it work? What do we do in our lives? Well, our new heart should change our perspective on life altogether, right? Because we got rid of our old heart, right, when we said yes to Jesus. Our old, stony, broken, hard heart left, and a new, soft heart that is hungry for the things of God and to follow Him in what He has called us to do. That's what we've got. And where we're going to really draw a line in the sand today is in Luke chapter 9, because Jesus describes the process. The way to get a new heart, the way to live out of this new life in Him, Jesus makes it really clear. He says this in Luke 29, verse 23. "And Jesus said to all, 'If anyone will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will save it. For what does it profit a person if they gain the whole world and loses or forfeits himself? Jesus makes it pretty clear. The way to get new life, the way to find new life, is to die. That doesn't make sense. We've got to die to ourselves so that we can find life in Him. We die to our old stony heart so that God can give us a new life in Him. It's what Jeremiah and Ezekiel were pointing forward to those thousands of years before Jesus came. It's what they were waiting for. And it can kind of get a bit confusing though. If we're ever confused though, it's like, well, I've done that. Like I said yes to Jesus, I'm a Christian. Great. That's awesome. If you're not a Christian yet, if you're exploring what it means to follow Jesus, it's a very simple thing. Jesus makes it clear, though. What does that actually look like? Well, I think Jesus illustrates it perfectly through his ministry, and the Gospels show us what he does. But Paul kind of sums it up really nicely in 2 Philippians. He kind of talks about what it looks like to live out a new life with a new heart towards the people of God and the world around you. And he says this in Philippians 2, verse 3. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to your own interests, but also to the interests of others. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who, though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped. But he emptied himself. He took on the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of man, and being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. See, a new heart in our lives, a new covenant that we've entered into, the way we live out the life of Christ for each and every one of us is we don't look to our own needs. We humble ourselves. Greatness wasn't something that Jesus strove for. It wasn't high on his agenda. He had opportunities throughout the Gospels to seize power if he wanted to. He had popular support. Everyone was behind him, but he didn't. He chose to be generous in his life to the point of actually dying. And we're talking about surrender, and I'm talking about this in that context because I'm hoping you're connecting the dots that a new heart in the new covenant is a heart that is not about itself, but about others. It surrenders itself to others. I think a really practical illustration of this, which still boggles my mind, is probably the life of Jonathan, the son of King Saul. If you're doing the devotions this week coming, you're going to spend a bit more time dwelling in this story, but I want to kind of preview it a little bit before we get there, because we get in 1 Samuel, about chapter 18, we meet Jonathan, the son of King Saul. And Saul is the first king of Israel. He's been appointed. The people said, he's tall and good looking. Let's pick him. And God said, okay, well, you've asked and I'm going to honor your wishes. And so they got this big, attractive looking king. And then as it worked in the ancient world and still today, the eldest male heir of the king is the next in line for the throne. Male succession is generally what happens. That's how it works. And so Jonathan, as soon as Saul is crowned king, has in front of him a pretty good life. Wealth and prestige and power and status in the community and in the world stage. And this is the thing that really boggles the mind. There was this boy, David, a shepherd boy, who the prophet Samuel anointed to be king and said, God's going to take the kingship away from Saul and he's going to give it to David. And I think for most of us, if we were in that position and we were Jonathan, we'd be like, security, take him out. We need to shut down this David guy. He's going to take my job. He's threatening my position and my power and my prestige. This David has to go. At the very least for us, we'd probably just go, oh, well, that's really good for him. I'm just going to, it's too much. I can't go near that. But what does Jonathan do? Jonathan loves David as he loves himself. He has this relationship with the guy who's going to take his job, his power, his prestige, his fame and fortune, everything. And he covenants with him, says, I love you, I will serve you. I will take what is mine and give it to you. What? What? The entire security of his life, he's willing to just give it away. Sounds awfully like Jesus, right? Love your neighbor as yourself. Just so happens the neighbor is the one who's going to get your job. But this is what Jonathan does in 1 Samuel chapter 18. Not only does he say to David, I love you more than anything. I will submit my life to yours. But he says this. Well, he does this, and this is the key. He strips himself of the robe that was on him, and he gave it to David. And he gave David his armor. And even his sword and his bow and his belt. He gave David all of the signs of kingship and power and prestige and inheritance. He gave to David what was rightfully his. What an example and what a challenge. This is someone who didn't have the access to God that we have as a New Testament believer, where the Holy Spirit has come and we have the indwelling presence of God after that day of Pentecost. This is Jonathan who just hears the words of God's anointed and responds, giving up absolutely everything he has. I mean, he had the opportunity to change his mind. Time and time again, in the very next chapter of 1 Samuel, David has to escape because Saul wants to kill him. And Jonathan and Jonathan's sister, who is also David's wife, helped David escape. They snuck him out of the house and lowered him down a wall. I mean, it would have been very easy for Jonathan just to let go of the rope. It's an accident. I'll be king. It would cross our mind, right? It would cross your mind. As you sit there, maybe, would you sign over the power of attorney to your whole family's estate to someone just because you loved them and you don't really, you're going to lose what you've got because you're just so convicted that you need to love and serve that person. That's what it looks like for us. It's the equivalent of that, of taking everything, my entire inheritance and fortune and going, I love you, I'll covenant with you, I'll just sign it over. We would really need our heads checked. But that's how much David and Jonathan were committed to each other, and that's under the old covenant, and Jesus calls us to even more. That is exciting and terrifying all at the same time, but it's because for us, it's an example because our new heart is a surrendered heart. The new heart that's been put within us is a heart of surrender. Because we're designed to love. Human beings are designed to love, to desire, to be in a relationship. God made us that way. It wasn't right for us to be alone. He gave us someone else. He doesn't want us to be on our own. But real love requires sacrifice. Real love requires surrender. It's not really love if I'm not giving up something. We surrender our right to get our own way when we love someone else. We follow Jesus' example with the picture of Jonathan in our minds, that we don't look to our own needs, but we submit ourselves to one another humbly in love. Love requires surrender. But we do this because we've been invited, because God has already loved us. He's already made every opportunity for us to be loved by Him. And so our love, our reciprocal love to Him is an act of surrender. It's crazy. We give up our rights. Like, if you thought about it, the things we do for love. How crazy is that? Some of you are singing that song in your head now. The things we do for love. But that's right. We write songs about it. I would do anything for love. Love, no, it's everything. But in order to love someone else and to love them well, we've got to give up our rights. We've got to give up our preferences if we're actually going to love someone, really love them, not just have the appearance of affection. If I'm going to love my family well, I've got to change the way I do things. I've got to put priorities ahead of my own. I've got to surrender my right to spend my money the way I like it, and I've got to spend it on food and uniforms and all those other things that come with having a family. I've got to surrender the rights in order to love them effectively. Our love for God and our life of surrender to Him, when we said yes to Him, when we said, I'll die to myself and I'll say yes to you, we've already given up those rights. We give of ourselves, we give of our lives, right? Because He's worth giving to. We give to our families and our friends because we love them so much we think they're worth giving to. It's all about this expression of love. But I think where we get unstuck, where it really starts to kind of fall apart a bit, where the beauty of something like Luke 9, where yes, I'll take up my cross daily and I'll die to myself and I'll say yes to you, Jesus. Part of us getting unstuck in that moment is that we realize we have to love God. Not have to, we realize we want to love God, and that to love God, we've got to give up some of our own needs to meet the needs of others. We forget that this is really an all-in thing. Jesus didn't say, mostly die to yourself. He didn't say, half die. Some of us have been mostly dead all of our lives. But this is the point. When we don't actually go all in with God, when we don't respond to that instruction of Jesus in Luke where he says, die to yourself and I will give you life. If you lose it for my sake, you'll find it. We go, yeah, God, I'll give you like at least 50%. I'll go 51%. You've got ownership. But we end up half dead and half alive and entirely miserable. Because we're trying to serve two masters. We're trying to serve our own life and serve what God's doing around us. But God reminds us, Jesus invites us freely, take up your cross. Every day, follow me. Because in that sacrifice, in that surrender, you will find life. Again, I just keep coming back to Jesus. He shows us so perfectly what this looks like. He shows us so powerfully how to do this. Jesus, I mean, he's fully man and he's fully God, right? He shows up, he could do pretty much whatever he wanted, I imagine. He's God, he can do what he wants. And yet we get to John chapter 5 and Jesus kind of explains his worldview of how things work. And he says to the people listening, truly, truly, I say to you, the Son can do nothing of his own accord, but only what he sees the Father doing. For whatever the Father does, that the Son does likewise. For the Father loves the Son and shows him all that he himself is doing. And greater works than these he will show him, so that you may marvel. Jesus intentionally, freely, sacrificially surrendered his right to choose what to do when he was doing his earthly ministry, to just do what the Father was doing. To just say what the Father was saying. And that's not a light thing because, as I read before in Philippians 2, when Paul recounts the life of Christ in an ancient creed, he said that Jesus was obedient to the point of death. I think it's pretty easy for me, and this is as much for me to go, God, I'll follow you, I'll do what you do, I'll say what you're saying, but well, that's uncomfortable to talk to that person who doesn't know you. It's a bit confronting to go up to that person who actually walked into the foyer of our church and is looking around like they want to ask a question because they're here to vote, but they don't know what this is, but it's a bit scary to go and talk to them. I can't imagine Jesus doing that. I can't imagine Jesus going, I'll be obedient, but up to a point, because that's going to make me uncomfortable. No, God makes this beautiful invitation that, you know what? You're never going to be as fulfilled as you could be. You're never going to live life like you could unless you say yes to me and no to you. Because in saying yes to me, you will find something that you would never be able to find on your own. So we get to the place where we need to do the work of a surrendered heart. Jesus said, die and you'll live. Take up your cross, follow me. A surrendered heart responds to God's invitation to live the way he's called us to live. We become obedient to the Father. We serve out of a motivation of love. And I've got to tell you that this is amazing to see what God is doing. It is spectacular to see what God is doing. I mean, we just heard that 3-minute video about someone 10 years ago who obediently just said, could I pray for you and your son in the midst of this moment? And God stepped into their reality and changed everything. That person could have said, oh, it's too much to pray. Day in, day out, we see people, you guys are just responding to God as you surrender your rights to your own choice and choose to follow him. Wow, we're seeing God do amazing things. When people are arriving and within 3 or 4 weeks, they've said, this is real, this is true, I'm giving my life to Jesus, and how can I pass this on? I'll come and do whatever it takes. It's happening. It actually works. It's so exciting. It's really cool. Testimony is the fruit of God taking surrendered lives and just pouring them into others. That's why I hope you get excited about testimony, because it's what dead people do. Everyone that God uses has said, I'm going to die to what's convenient to me and I'm going to say yes to him, and life is going to flood in that moment. That's how presence-based covenant community is designed to work. If I come in going, where are my needs going to be met today? Where am I going to get myself feeling good? Who's going to come up to me? I'm really upset. Why is no one asking me what's going on? We're missing the point. Penny and I do a lot of pre-marriage counseling with young couples, and the thing that actually excites us the most is when we get to sit down and we actually use that Philippians 2 passage, and it's like, if the two of you here don't worry about your own needs, but do whatever you can to love and serve the other person's needs, both of you get your needs met. Both of you get fully loved. Both of you have someone whose entire life is pointed to, how can I help you feel loved? That's amazing, but we think that when we come here, it's not actually the same. We miss the point. God said it simply, seek first my kingdom. Seek first my kingdom, Jesus said. Everything else, I'll look after. Seek first my kingdom. I'll look after the rest. He's just been talking about finding food and clothes and all those things that we think about every day. Seek first my kingdom. I'll look after everything else. But in his goodness and in his grace and his mercy, he says, you've got free will. Maybe you'll just choose to do your own thing. And I can't look after everything else because you're not seeking first my kingdom. When you have needs, are you looking to his kingdom, or are you looking to try and meet your own needs, thereby missing out on his opportunity to step into your situation? If we spend our time looking after what God cares about, it gives him space to step into our lives. And where this really lands for me personally, Paul talks about it in 1 Corinthians 6. He says, your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit. But actually, you are not your own. Your life is not yours. You were bought at a price. When we said yes to Jesus, he transferred us out of the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of light. We've been bought at a price. We are no longer our own. Which is exciting and scary all at once. And for me, why I even talk about this is that, and I might have shared this before, and apologies if I have, but I was a few years back going through a whole lot of stuff, just internally, personally, smiling and nodding outside, but really wrestling with where the Lord had me and looking at all my peers and what they were doing in life and where they were going. And I was like, God, that's not fair. I was having a 40-something-year-old temper tantrum like a toddler going, what about me, God? It's not fair. I've been doing all this stuff for you. Come on. It's not fair. I'm sure no one noticed. I'm sure you could ask Penny. She wouldn't know I was miserable to be around. But one day I was just in scripture and just reading, and I'm right at the end of John's gospel in chapter 21. There's this little passage which is really interesting. Jesus has just been talking to Peter about feeding the sheep. He asks, do you love me? And Peter's like, you know I love you, so feed my sheep. And then there's this super weird little bit where it says, Jesus says to John, talking about Peter, truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you're old, you'll stretch out your hands and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go. I don't know, contextually, as Jesus says right after it, by this he was talking about the kind of death that Peter would die. But God just said to me in that moment, you know, when you were young, pretty stupid, flippantly approaching life, you could do what you wanted. You didn't listen to me. You just chose wherever you wanted to go. You did whatever you wanted to do. But you know, there was a day when you said yes to me and the call that I put on your life. And from that day forward, you've actually surrendered your right to choose anymore. When you said yes to me, you gave up your right to choose now what you would do, because it's my decision now for your life, he said. When you die to yourself and say yes to me, it's actually now my decision what you do with your time, with your energy, with your life. If you've died to yourself, then you said yes to me, and now it's my decision, not yours anymore. And after feeling about this big, feeling pretty embarrassed that I had such a little temper tantrum to the Lord, you know, I got up off the floor in the horrible puddle of mess that I'd left there, of just repenting and saying sorry and saying, God, I just want to give you back my life where I've tried to take it off you, where I've tried to choose for myself what I've done, and said, God, what is it today? And I'm not perfect at it every day, and every day I'm aware that I have to take up my cross again and die to my desire to make decisions for my own life. But the truth is, I've never felt more fulfilled than when I said yes to him. It's not easy, but man, I get to the end of a day and go, God, something's going on and I'm really excited about it. So the question is for you, what does it look like for you? If you said yes to him, you've actually forfeited your right for you to choose anymore. It might be hard, it might be frustrating, it might even take everything in you, it might even cost you your life. But we need to trust that if we're obedient to him, he will see to every one of our needs. And the awkward and wonderful and embarrassing thing is, on the other side of that death, man, I feel so rich. I can't believe I had a little spray and a little whinge about all of the stuff I had to give up when in return I get him. It's a bit awkward, but it's so very good. So what does it mean for you? We're going to land this now. We're going to get serious about this. And these guys are just going to start to just play some music as we land this. Because this is where actually we're not going to have a big song of response. It's not going to be a big rah-rah time, which is amazing. And I love it. And I love it when those powerful moments of worship sweep through a room like this and everyone just gets excited. But right now, I actually think this is a thing for you and God to sort out. We've each been given something beautiful and unique, Pastor John said last week. Something to contribute to community. We can't be us without you being you in this place and in this community and in God's call for you. The kingdom, while it glorifies God, we as his kingdom people are a little bit lost without you being you. That's the invitation and the power. You know, a Sunday doesn't happen unless people have surrendered their rights to sleep in. Sunday doesn't happen unless people surrender their right to stay in and worship as long as they want, and they go and make coffee and they go and usher you in and out and they answer your questions and they pray for you. This doesn't happen unless people surrender themselves. But the amazing thing is, the beauty and the power of God is that when we say yes to him, we stop having to ask the question, God, should I serve? Should I give? Should I come? Should I show up? Should I do this or should I do that? Should I spend my time on the things of your kingdom in this place and in this community? That's a dead person's question. When we've said yes to him, the question starts to become, God, where can I serve you right now? Where can I give of my time and my energy to invest into your kingdom purposes right now? It may not be where I end up, but what can I do right now that best honors you and takes my life as an offering and sows it into the life of others? You know, it's not me asking. It's not John or the pastors asking you to give your time and show up and serve at a church service or in a ministry during the week. Jesus is asking you, is your life mine and will you listen to what I ask you to do? It might be kids ministry or host team or life group leading. It might be going to your neighbors and sacrificing your life to bless them. It might be welcoming a stranger into your home who is homeless and giving up your right to be comfortable on a Thursday night and have someone else there who you don't really get but needs love. Surrendering our lives to him looks like asking him, God, what do I do today? Not should I or shouldn't I, but what would you have me do today? You guys know there's a join the team desk, there's pastors and ministry leaders all around who would just probably weep with joy if you came up and said, how can I best serve you right now? I'm sure many of you will do that today and during the week as you reflect on these devotions and in the life group studies. And that's the challenge that's in front of you for this week. But today, in this moment, that service starts with a surrendered heart. Saying, not my will, but yours be done. I choose to die to myself so that I can find my life in you. God will empower you and gift you and energize you to be about his work, his resurrection life, but to get his resurrection life, you're going to have to die. These guys are going to lead us in just a reflection time of worship for the rest of our service this morning. And so I want to challenge you to spend some time doing that business with God. God, what's going on in my life that I've not surrendered to you? What have I not died to yet that I need to so that I can say yes to you? Maybe today's the first time you've ever been at church and like, what is this guy talking about? Well, Jesus wants you to know that you can find life in him. And if you're willing, if you offer your life to him, he'll give you back his resurrection life. But for all of us, there's an invitation to surrender to him.
Thanks for listening to this River Life podcast. Make sure you subscribe to keep up to date with all the latest content. If this podcast has raised any questions for you, contact us via church@riverlifechurch.org.au or through Facebook and Instagram. Thanks for listening.